Hello and welcome to this episode of Rooted Recovery Stories. I'm Patrick Custer, your host. So very excited to be here today with my wonderful guest, country music artist, Frank Ray.
Hey, Patrick, how you doing, man?
I'm great.
Thanks for having me. This is an incredible setup.
Yeah. This is going to be a great episode, and I'm so really excited. This is a unique conversation we haven't had yet, and I'm excited to dive in with you. And so, you know, before we get to some of the nitty gritty, I'd love to know, like, you know, when you were a kid, we've already, you know, talked about that you're in country music now. What did you want to be when you grew up?
This is it. Yeah. This has always been the goal. This has always been the dream for as long as I can remember. And it's really funny when you tell teachers or academics and people that are molding your young mind that this is what you want to do for a living. They're like, that's cool, but can you find something a little more realistic?
Right.
And I think that's very interesting. But this has always been what I've wanted to do. And the fact that I'm doing it it's a dream come true, really.
That's awesome. Yeah. So when did you start getting into music?
For as long as I can remember, of course, my very first memory is probably in the third grade. And I joined choir, and there was this girl I had a really big crush on. Her name was Bianca. And not B, Anka, as V, Anka. It's very interesting down in Laredo, Texas. I got her attention because I sang, and that was sort of like a light bulb went off. And I was like, oh, well, this is cool. I want to do this. And that was pretty much it. But I did get my start there, and I've just been singing ever since.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool. Pretty cool journey so far.
So moving forward through life, obviously you didn't start making money from singing necessarily right at 12, whatever age that was. But how did life evolve for you? You know, because there have been some years between now and then. What did life look like?
I mean, it was pretty interesting for me. I had a very interesting childhood. My parents, you know, split when I was like four. And so my dad lived in New Mexico and my mom lived in Texas. And so kind of jumping back and forth is a very interesting dynamic to go through as a child. But you learn how to navigate. And I guess it was in a weird way preparing me for all the traveling I was going to do today or with my career now. But I was also very fortunate that happened because I was immersed in the world of country music in Texas. And that's all my mom listened to. That's what my aunts listened to.
So the second best kind of country music.
exactly. But, you know, there was also Tejano music was huge in San Antonio and Laredo where I grew up. And so already you can see sort of both my worlds kind of blending or bleeding into each other. And then when I'd fly to New Mexico for the summer, I was, you know, immersed in the world of mariachis and rancheras and cumbias and corridos and living so close to the Mexican border. It was just a big part of my life. And so all of these different influences that I grew up with have molded me into the man that I am today. And so, you know, in a weird way, you could say I was pretty fortunate that happened.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. So, as you like went through high school and what have you, you have all these influences on music and you're pursuing them. Like what was it, how did you continue to pursue music, and what did the other realm of your life professionally look like?
I mean, in high school is also an interesting part of my life because at 16, I mean, my high school sweetheart and I, we had our first kid. That was my first born daughter. She's 19 now.
Dang.
But so yeah, I was definitely going through it. I was working at Pepper Supermarket as a stock boy in the dairy and frozen department. And so trying to navigate that and being a very young father, at the same time, trying to figure out how I was going to, you know, keep my grades up and all that stuff. It was all very, very, tumultuous time for me, but music was always sort of the grounding factor for me. I was in choir 9th through 12th grade and, you know, in band grades before that. So music has always been a big and essential part of my life. And, you know, come graduation time, I really didn't have any direction on where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. I started going to New Mexico State University and I did that for all of a semester in college, and I was like, this is not for me, man.
Yeah.
I always found myself, especially like in piano class, I was part of university singers there as well. So again, in choir, and still really involved with music, but I found myself in piano class just not listening to the teacher and wanted to do my own thing and create my own thing. And so that structure for me wasn't my strong suit. And so I started with music and doing all that stuff. But you can only do that for so long, right? Yeah. Life is still coming at you 100 miles an hour. And I found myself just started picking up all kinds of different jobs, man. I was a host. I was a busboy. I worked building corrals with my dad over the summer. I was a telemarketer. I slang cell phones. I mean, you name it, man. I did it. I worked in retail, folding clothes, the whole thing. And eventually I found myself working at the detention center in Luna County, Demi, New Mexico, which is where I went to high school. I did that for all of 11 months before I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. But fortunately I had already forged some friendships with members of law enforcement that would bring different inmates in, and they kept trying to persuade me to come over to the law enforcement side. And so I did that, and I applied to Las Cruces Police Department, and I blinked and 10 years went by.
Really? Did it really feel like it was that quick?
It really did feel like it was that quick. But wow. It was a wealth of life experience that I gained, but yeah, it's amazing how quickly time can fly. And so that even more so was sort of the precursor to when I decided to quit in 2017. I know how quickly time can go by. Yeah. And so there was really no room for failure or no room for slowing down. And you know, I knew if I was going to do this full time that I needed to put 150% in and give it the best that I could possibly give it.
Had you been doing, so you hadn't given up on music?
No, you've been doing
a little bit of both through?
Right, yeah. And so law enforcement was actually one of those things where it requires a lot of your attention, right? A lot of your focus. And so I did find myself for the better part of like the first half of my career just dedicated to law enforcement and trying to figure out the ropes, right? But once I kind of got a handle on things, I found myself turning to music again. And it was just sort of an outlet for me, a very healthy outlet for me to express myself and deal with the traumas that we were dealing with on a daily basis. And, you know, I struck up a little country band and started, you know, I had enough seniority to have Thursday, Friday, Saturday off. So those were prime gigging days. And so I started playing all the little honky tonks and stuff around my region and gained some notoriety, and people started recognizing me as the singing cop, so to speak. And
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so, that went on for a little bit until I met my manager in El Paso, and he said, I think you got something special, man, but I think you're a solo project, honestly. I think you're a solo act, and I can form a band around that. And that was sort of my sign. And, I linked up with my manager, Oscar, and he's a self-made businessman. So he has a lot of really good business savvy, and I trusted his instincts when it came to how we were going to approach this thing, and he trusted my talent, and here we go, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned, dealing with the trauma, while you were in law enforcement, and a lot of the people that you, deal with while you're a police officer are experiencing their own form of the trauma.
Yep.
But you also experience secondary,
yeah,
or first in some cases. And so I just wonder, like, if you would speak to that, what was that like? Because it's so often that the first responder's voice, we don't really hear a lot about that. Yeah. In mainstream culture. And I'll tell you, from years of working in behavioral health treatment for addiction and mental health issues, I have put so many first responders through treatment because of the severe trauma that's caused them to get knocked out of life.
Yeah.
That wasn't dealt with for them.
That's
when they needed it. That's most
great perspective too. But you're right. It's the men and women that do the job, whether it's I dealt with my career was in law enforcement, so being a police officer, but it stems so much further than that. Whether you're an EMT or a paramedic or a firefighter, anybody that provides that, anyone that's on scene first and has to deal with the first instance of trauma, it's life changing, and you don't realize it until you've done it for a while. it's tough. It really is tough for you to navigate through that, especially in an environment where we are trained to have this sort of command presence and this assertiveness about you. And a lot of times vulnerability isn't one of those qualities that you associate with someone who wears a uniform or bears a badge. But at the end of the day, if you can strip all that down and humanize a person that's wearing that uniform, then you realize very quickly how they can be impacted by the traumas that they're dealing with. Yeah, you're right. Nobody ever calls 911 when things are going great, you know?
Right.
And so you go and you deal with, you know, unfortunately, sometimes the worst that the community has to offer. And that trauma's got to go somewhere. And if you don't deal with it in a healthy way, or you don't express it, it can manifest itself into some really big problems, whether it's alcohol abuse or substance abuse, domestic violence issues, which a lot of people don't realize that first responders deal with as well, right? Because we're usually the ones responding to those calls for service, but they have spouses or partners, and if you don't deal with it correctly, it can manifest itself. And of course, ultimately, suicidal ideations. And so these are real problems that exist, and which is why I've made it sort of my point to use this platform to raise awareness, because, you know, to your point, no one's really talking about it. And so yeah. I think it's important for us to start that conversation and move it in a direction where it becomes a normalized topic of conversation for us to have within the first responder community.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I wonder what your... I'd like to know your take on, because obviously over the past few years, there's been a lot of tumultuous polarization between society and police officers, yeah, right? Sure. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, you hit such a poignant space of talking about, doesn't matter which first responder you're mentioning, they all involve such levels of trauma, and that trauma's got to go somewhere. And if it's not dealt with, it's going to come out in one of those ways that right. you talked about.
Right.
And so, whether it's you're a police officer, whether you're, you know, an ambulance worker, firefighter, whatever the case may be, because your experience is specifically within law enforcement, I guess my question is what is your perspective on the situation of how that violence or sure. issues play out within the police?
I think the first thing,
I'm kind of dancing around that topic because I don't want to come from an offensive standpoint.
No,
you know?
Gotcha. Trust me, as a cop for 10 years, I'm rarely offended. right. I've been called enough. Everything under the sun, and so has my mother, and it's bad. Honestly, I think the first thing I do when I see anything that's playing out on media is I remove the politics behind it, mm-hmm. right? The politicization. I can't say that.
We got it.
You got
I
it.
Got,
you yeah. know what I'm trying to say. Politicization.
Yes.
That's such a weird word. If you remove that and you have this objective approach, then you can start to see what's right and wrong with the picture. I'd be the first one to say that accountability is 100% something that law enforcement or first responders should be, should be held to a higher standard for, because you are responsible for the safety of anybody that's in your custody or the safety of the community. And so we should be held accountable if something were to go wrong and there's no justification for it, mm-hmm. then absolutely. I stand by that. And I think the vast majority of the public agrees with that. What you see play out on media is always bad news. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because it has a tendency to sell a lot better. It's a more interesting story. Mm-hmm. But so that my perspective on that is just removing the politics so that you can actually look at it from an objective lens and be able to approach the situation and have a productive conversation about it.
Yeah.
But you know, that's just a fraction of what these men and women actually deal with. For every bad video you see a cop taking somebody down or something like that, there are 100 more of it happening vice versa, mm. right? Of a police officer getting shot or hit with a vehicle or spit on or whatever it is. I mean, and those are things that a lot of times we just kind of take on the chin and, you know, it doesn't make any huge news coverage. It doesn't make the headlines. It doesn't do all that stuff. And that's what I'm talking about. These are the things that they deal with, and they go out and do it again over and over and over. They go home, take a shower, and get ready for work the next day, because that's the kind of people that they are. They're good people. And so, yeah, I think if we can just do better about having a productive conversation about it, we'd be better off as a society. But
you what know. Is from your perspective, because, you know, what I hear is this, you know, dynamic of somebody who, because I can only imagine myself, right? Like if I'm being beat up, or, you know, I've got 9 out of 10 instances where I'm, like you said, having to take things on the chin. Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting, well, first of all, if I don't have it within my wheelhouse to be vulnerable with another human being.
Yeah.
And, or I'm not having any type of, outlet to process things.
Yeah.
No wonder we have the 10th thing being something that is some type of violence or brutality, right? Like, so what is there, because I don't know the answer to this question. Is there right now currently something, like mental health services that is offered to first responders
it's
freely, or is it?
I think it's sort of a knee jerk reaction now. I mean, you start seeing more police departments and firefighters and different first responder organizations start. We're starting to have the conversation, and they're starting to provide those resources, which isn't something that was always at the top of the priority list, if it was on the list at all. But because you see an increase in first responders either taking their own life or losing their job because of alcohol abuse or something like that, talking about the knee jerk, it's more reactive than it has been proactive, right? And I think that's been part of the problem, is that we haven't really had administrations step forward, or we haven't really moved this conversation and brought it to light so that somebody can ring that bell and you know, and say this is a problem.
Yeah.
But it's changing, and that's for the better. So kudos on the men and women that are making those strides in the right direction, because that's what's necessary. Again, removing the us versus them mentality sort of thing, and just being like, hey, we're all human beings going and experiencing life, and you know, especially in that capacity of trauma, how do we make sure that we're providing resources for the people that have to go and respond to these traumas, and making sure that they, you know, feel comfortable enough to voice that they're not okay. So it's still a long and slow process.
Sure.
I've gone and talked to a bunch of different people, and you can see some people are more willing to speak up and be like, I know what you're saying, thank you for the visit. Other people just kind of clam up and just like, when are we going to be done with this, so that I can go on my shift. But at the end of the day, if we're having the conversation, then it's a step in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think there's two things to this, because I, like I said, on the other side, outside of this show, the other things that I do in my professional life is working in treatment. So we deal with employee assistance programs all the time, and especially with first responders or what have you. And every organization or institution is different depending on the city, state, you know, municipality, and what have you. But in so many instances, what we see is the EAP or whatever is provided is like, you get free five sessions on us per incident, you know? And and so, you know, what I was talking about with the two-prong issue that I see is that, right, if what we're looking at is an incident's got to happen, and you know, we've got a limit to what's being provided, then we're saying you get, imagine like one of the most like life altering negative things happens to you, and you're supposed to go talk about it in 5 sessions and be fixed. Like, what on earth?
Yeah.
So that's one issue that I see. And then the other issue is the stigma surrounding mental health in general, but specifically for people who, in that realm of things have to be tough enough and tenacious enough to go out and take 99% of the things that happen to them on the chin, like you said.
Yeah.
How on earth do we expect, with the stigma it being what it is, those people to be willingly vulnerable enough?
Yeah. No, my gosh. Especially after years and years of training that you need to just brush it off and move on to the next call. It's a huge problem. And to your point, I mean, the issue just doesn't start with having the conversation. There are so many other logistical issues that get in the way, right? A bunch of little, like, hurdles that you have to go through, whether it's something with the county or the city. And then it's, of course, it comes down to budgetary needs and do they have the budget for it? Or do they want to go and buy some more, like, do they want to buy riot gear or new cars or something like that for the troops? I mean, it's just really, it's there's a lot of things that stand in the way, that make mental health a priority. And I can't imagine, like, to your point, how frustrating it might be, on your end as well, trying to provide this service. And I wish that that wasn't the case. And I think that's why we're working so diligently with members of Congress, because I'm from New Mexico originally. I teamed up with Senator Ben Ray Lujan from New Mexico, and he's been a huge advocate and a big supporter of mine in trying to get this conversation started. Congresswoman Napolitano has started this. She's a very, very respected person on the Hill, and she is known more for her efforts on starting up mental health consortiums and things like that. And so I've gone to DC now several times with my team, with my manager Oscar, with members of the label to go and shed a light on this on this whole thing. And we're working on trying to get legislation passed so that we can allocate funds not only to raise awareness for the campaign, but also to provide those resources. Now, there are organizations that exist out there, like whether it's COPS or 988 Lifeline or SAMHSA, a bunch of different organizations that people might not be very familiar with, which is why we started my campaign, FRAY. So FRAY essentially acts as a hub to point first responders in the right direction of these organizations that already exist. Right. So,
which, if you want to find it, it's frayoc.org.
Yeah. Right. Frayoc.org. And it was something that Oscar and I, we were in DC for the Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute, which is a mouthful. Right.
Yeah.
But it's basically just leaders in the Hispanic community that do different things. And one of those sessions that we attended as part of the conference was a mental health conversation. And you know, not surprisingly, it was one of the least attended parts of the convention.
And I
started thinking, why is it so difficult for people to talk about this? Now, in mainstream pop culture, it seems to be it seems to be doing very, very well. But as it relates to any other aspect, I think in general, you don't even have to be a first responder to be uncomfortable with talking about your mental health. It's just one of those things where you have to remove the negative stigma that's attached to it and be like, it's a real problem. We all go through it. And it has different, you know, you can be on different ends of the spectrum with mental health, whether you're just having a bad day or you're really considering suicide. That's how broad it is.
That's right.
And we all as human beings fit somewhere in that spectrum. And, I'm just talking about more so with first responders because of the constant trauma they deal with on a daily basis. So FRAY does just that, and I think it helps when the conversation is coming from a peer, right? And so also to your point, that's what some organizations are doing, some departments are doing. They have peer support groups, they incorporate wellness dogs, you know, the employee assistance programs, things like that may not have a cap with 5 sessions, but some of them do. There are efforts being made. It's just not being made fast enough,
right?
Or on a scale as large as we'd like to see. And so that's what we're using my platform for, is if people might not be familiar with it, or they might be second guessing themselves. They go and enjoy a country music concert and I talk about FRAY. They go and dig a little bit more and they don't have to dig very far. You just Google FRAY or go to the website frayoc.org and boom, before you know it, you're in the right direction and you're part of the solution. And that's a good thing.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to have all the links Yes. If you're listening or watching to this right watching this right now, just scroll down. You're going to see everything you can click on.
That's good.
To connect.
Thank you for doing that, by the way.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm like so pumped and jazzed about this topic and that you're doing what you are.
Yep.
Because I think, you know, my gosh, once anybody who's gifted a platform, when we're able to do it for more than just a self-serving purpose,
yep.
right? Like, obviously you're getting to use your gift and like fulfill your mission of wanting to like, you know, sure. sing and do the, you know, mm-hmm. but like, this is awesome that you're using it, you know,
yeah.
Double purpose.
Well, I think that's just it. Sometimes to my own detriment, I talk about it more than I do my own music. you can still go check out the music. Please go check it out. But this is something I feel like can really affect some real change. Right?
Yes.
It can affect some real change and we can save some lives. And to me, that's what's more important than that. And if I'm not using my platform to, you know, spread positivity throughout the world, then what am I doing it for at the end of the day? You know? And so that's sort of the mindset that we keep. And I think it's important for other artists that might have a platform like this to speak up and let's change the conversation together.
Yeah. I love that. I want to ask you two questions about your time, kind of from the negative, it sounds bad, but from the negative side of things and then the positive side of things. So during your time in the task force or as a police officer, I wonder if you might be able to paint a picture for us of either a broad stroke, you know, paint a broad stroke of the picture or even a specific incident of, you know, like how you yourself experienced,
traumatic situation.
And then we'll move on to the positive side, but just first I'd love to hear like your own, you know, take on that.
I think there's so many things that I can draw from. Obviously just the day-to-day patrol is tough enough because you're dealing with a roller coaster of emotions, right? You're going from one high intensity call to maybe taking a stolen garden hose report, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you're going right back up in your vehicle pursuit now, and then you you know, got to take a burglary report or something like that happened 2 weeks ago, things like that. So you're constantly doing this up and down, you really don't know how to, your body, you can probably see your blood pressure is just doing this and that and this and that. And, it's that in and of itself is traumatic for anybody that's dealing with it. But of course being in knockout drag out fights, I mean, I have my fair share of those. And that's always scary because you never know if you're going to win, right? If you're going to make it out on top and you start hearing those sirens coming to your aid and you're just like, oh, thank God, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just fighting with every ounce of energy that you've got, or you're running with every ounce of energy that you got. And a lot of times you're gassed at that by the end of it all. But I mean, specifically without going into too much detail, I think, If you've ever had to listen to the wails, right, or the screams of a mother who just lost a child, that haunts you. It haunts me to this day. It was the things that keep me up at night. I responded to a call. It was a three-year-old that was non-responsive, and it was at an apartment complex. And I got there, and it turns out she was a 3 months old. This mother's just waiting for me, and hands me this child, and you can see very, very plainly that the child was deceased, mm-hmm. and the mother's clawing at you to say, bring her back. Right. And you start doing all these little compressions and knowing full well that there's nothing you can do. But after a while, like you start thinking, well, maybe I can, all sense of reality kind of goes out the door. And you're trying and it's one of the toughest things you have to do is to pull a parent away from someone who just lost a kid. And that happened several times. Mm-hmm. That's just one occurrence. And to think now about what I've been talking about, I didn't have a break after that. I did call in the report and go on to the next one. And it's so freaking difficult to deal with that. And I remember I went home that night. This is again, just one night of many nights in a 10-year career. But I went home and I was just bawling to my wife and telling her, I don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. And she hadn't walked a mile in my shoes. All she could do is try to empathize the best way she could. And, you know, which goes to speak about spousal support as well. It's so important. And they take that trauma too, right? You take that trauma home. How do you grow from that? And I didn't feel comfortable enough talking to my peers about it because you had to have this sort of Billy badass sort of attitude, right? And just and nothing can bother me. I'm impervious to pain. And that was tough. Is trying to find a way to navigate through that. Fortunately, I had music to lean back on, and I found ways of expressing myself through that, and that really, really did help. And I didn't realize how much it was helping me until I started this campaign. But yeah, I not everybody has that.
I was going to say, do you think that, because that was my next question on the positive side of things, what was it that helped you not, because clearly you're a well-adjusted person sitting before me now, right, doing so much good in the world. So what was, on the positive side of things, what was it that saved you from, you know, becoming one of those statistics of somebody that went down a negative path? Clearly the music anchored you, and you said the spousal support.
It was music. And of course my wife really helped me get through a lot of dark moments. And, but if you don't have music, I'm not saying it has to be music, right? It could be anything. If you like to hunt, you like to fish, you like to hike, you like to swim, play golf, cook out, spend time with the family, whatever it is you like to do, you find that happy place and you go there. But it's so much better when you can find that happy place and also talk about the trauma you're dealing with without getting any judgment for it, or without making the conversation seem so dark and heavy, because it is a very dark and heavy topic that a lot of people, when they're at a barbecue, don't necessarily want you to bring down their vibes. But if they have something similar that they're dealing with or can at least relate to you, then, you know, that just talking about it goes such a long way, and which is why we've been so passionate about going out and speaking out to these police departments, even if sometimes they don't want to hear it. It's necessary for you to have that conversation. And I think that's made all the difference in the world. I mean, there was a police officer in Washington that reached out to me on Instagram, and 3 days after I had my visit there, and she said, "Hey, I want to let you know that I just dealt with my first officer involved shooting. It's a very, very traumatic experience for me, but because of your visit, I didn't hesitate not one second to reach out for help." And I said, that's what we're trying to do. That's the effect that we're trying to have by, you know, with this campaign. And, you know, if we save one life, then it was already worth it. Absolutely. But you see how necessary the conversation is. I mean, different EMTs, I was getting a blood work done, or I was getting an IV done, because I was feeling a little under the weather a few months back. And I started talking to the EMT about, or the paramedic, I'm sorry, about Frey. And he said, "Man, I'm so glad that you're doing that. And it's good to hear. Just a year ago, I had plans on taking my own life." And he had it all worked out. And for whatever reason, thank God, he didn't go through with it. And he's been a very big champion about mental health and that conversation. So to see how you can go from one end of the country to the other and see that the same problem exists, and the need for the conversation exists, then that makes me that much more passionate about it, and makes me want to go out there and do it more. And at this point, I've probably visited about 45 to 50 different police departments and firehouses, and just talking to people. And you can see, man, everyone's got a story like that. Everyone's got a story, not just me, but everybody who does this job has got a story like that. And it's traumatic, but it's how we work through it together as a community that makes all the difference.
It is. And I think that, one of the most, I'm obviously such a fan of storytelling because I'm doing what I'm doing here, right? Like this is my life's passion project. And I think there's so much power in the telling of stories, and whether it's one-on-one with an audience, you know, whether you're getting up and speaking, the power of just transmitting your own life's experience, and, you know, helpful information that people might not have heard.
Yep.
And in a way that they need to hear it.
It speaks volumes, man. It really does.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I'm so glad you're doing what you're doing there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I know, we're not going to stop. I mean, as long as this platform continues to grow, then the more the message grows. And I hope to, again, try to affect some serious change for the better, but have some positive influence in somebody's life. And I'm very, very active on social media as well. So if people want to come and just chat,
yeah.
I'm also teaming up. I've teamed up with a bunch of different platforms, whether it's the Officer Support Initiative or programs down in Florida are doing some really good things. I visited with Orlando PD over there, and you know, they dealt with the Pulse shooting, and you know, they're still struggling with that today.
Yeah.
Metro Nashville had the most recent Covenant shooting, which was, I can't even imagine
what it's
like, talking about the children that are affected sometimes with, you know, the violence that our community has to offer. But what it's like to have to make that notification and call those parents, or to take that young life and, you know, transport it elsewhere. It's so difficult to deal with. But to that point, we made it our mission to go and speak to those officers, because whether or not they're ready to hear it right then in the moment, they needed to hear it.
And like you said, if it's just one person, is it not all worth it?
Yeah. And just on that note as well, Frey as a campaign itself, it's still in its, you know, infancy stages. It's still in, we're always constantly developing it and trying to add more links that might be helpful. And as long as we vet them and they're legit, but we're also doing things on our own. We reached out and kudos to my record label, everyone at the BMG fam, Broken Bow Records, Stony Creek. They all see what I'm doing and they wanted to help. And they gave us a budget to, build out what we're calling a decompression room for members at the Metro Nashville PD. And essentially what it is that we got them a full body massage chair, right? Bose is donating a state-of-the-art sound system, and we got track lighting, and we're going to build out this room where you can just basically go and just zen out for 30, 40 minutes, whatever it is, 15 minutes, whatever it is you need.
Wow.
Go lock up your firing arm, take your uniform off, and get into a right headspace, you know. And we hope to do those kinds of build-outs with departments everywhere, you know, if they need it. And you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg, man.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something that's just like, as we've continued talking, this sticks over the side of my mind. I think about like a typical day for me or the average person, working in a job. Like if I have something that goes south during my day, I can kind of compartmentalize that.
Yep.
And I mean, I can be shitty or do what, you know, whatever. And it's not going to, I mean, you know, the butterfly effect. Yeah. I have the power to affect a lot of other people's lives if I choose to go down a negative path, but, or heck, in many cases I can just go home if it's that bad. When you just sharing with me about, you know, that side of things, you know, you have that negative experience that's so traumatic. You don't get a break after that when your shift is still going on. You've got to go back in your patrol car and keep going. I've never thought about what it's like to be in those shoes of like, you don't have time to process what you just went through. Like your day's still going on and you've got to go answer whatever the next thing is.
Yeah. I think, there's a buddy of mine named Tony Sines who, he's retired now, but he was with LCPD, and just to go to show you how they're constantly dealing with stuff, right? He had just been involved in a shooting, and you know, this child, her dad, you know, he was the suspect in the case, and unfortunately they took his life. And to think, like, she's seen all this play out and all these cops and firefighters and this whole, her house just turned into this huge scene, and Tony went from having his firearm out, right, and looking at assessing the whole situation and realizing I need to make this a safe place for her. And he puts his gun up, right, takes his belt off and puts it in the trunk and comes out with a stuffed animal and gets her and starts talking to her in the kindest way possible and removes her from the situation. And that, who knows what kind of impact that had, but to the point I'm trying to make is that you're constantly trying to figure out how to fix the situation, right, as a first responder, not realizing that he just had his firearm out, and bullets were flying everywhere, and all this stuff. And you know, I often wonder, you know, how that affects him to this day, you know, or how it affects anybody that might have a story like that.
Right.
But, you don't get a break. You still have to, you know, do what you need to do, right? However the situation plays itself out, but then also learn how to be that kind presence for somebody else who might need it in that moment. And so, and after that, he they take care of what's going on here. Who's taking care of Tony?
Right.
Right. Who's taking care of Tony? And did anybody stop and offer him the same sort of kind gesture, or did he just have to go and wash his hands and go on to the next call? So that is the kind of stuff that they're dealing with on a consistent basis. And, you know, I just think it's about time that we take care of the people that take care of our community.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Couldn't agree more. Well, with that, I think that what a perfect place to kind of wrap that part of the conversation of your mission. I want to get to your music. Even we've talked a little bit about it, but you're doing some awesome stuff.
Thank you.
Starting to get some visibility here in Nashville with a lot of big names. And you're currently on tour, right?
Yeah, I actually just finished my tour with Old Dominion.
Awesome.
In Lake Tahoe, but that's been going on since January.
I just came back from Lake Tahoe yesterday. Oh,
it's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
If you need to go zen out anywhere, go to Lake Tahoe. That's a great place to go. And, you know, it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever seen. I think it's really cool.
But, same.
But but of course it's summertime, so festival season is in full swing, and so we've been doing all that, and you know, and we're just gearing up for the next show.
Sweet.
That comes tomorrow, I think, is when I gotta go. All right. And then you know, keeping our eyes set on the fall. But all of this is to say that while we're promoting the music, we also promote a positive message, and I think the music reflects the positivity that we, you know, like to showcase. We go out there and show people a good time, because no matter what walk of life you come from, if you buy tickets to a concert or you go to a festival or whatever, everyone goes with the same goal in mind. It's just to go have a couple of drinks, forget about the outside world for a little bit. Anything outside of that fence is not important. What matters is the people that you're with, the music that you're listening to, and which is why I think our music is so important for people to have this positive experience. And then, you know, in the process, they leave there with, you know, the message, and knowing that we're trying to help first responders out there, not
Absolutely.
From a political standpoint, but from a human standpoint.
Right.
And I think we're going to continue to do that. And as long as we stay that path and stay that course, we're going to change some lives.
Heck yeah. You know, with all the summer stuff going on, and people enjoying your music in real time, I want to hear about the new music that you have.
Yeah.
You just had an album come out.
I did.
What's
yeah.
the story behind that? The passion, the heart.
It's my self-titled major label debut album. Mm-hmm. I'm very, very excited about it, because I've been sitting on these songs for the better part of 2 years and just kind of crafting it and waiting for the time to be right. And, just released it and the reception has been so great.
Yeah.
We get to perform. It's an exciting time for the band and I to go out there and perform some new music for people, and just to see the positive impact that it's having at, whether we're on tour or at a festival or at a fair or at a dive bar, it doesn't really matter. People are reacting in the way that I'd hoped. And it's sort of just a full circle moment for me from the start of our conversation, where I started out in third grade and thought, you know, this is what I want to do with my life. And here I am living it, every single day. And so it's a very proud moment. And I encourage everyone to go listen to it, because it's the best reflection of who I am as a person and as an artist. If you're looking for traditional country music, or you're looking for stuff with a Latin flair, or if you're looking for the pop soul hooks, the family dynamic, the party anthem, it's all in there. The Sad Bastard songs are in there too. Not a whole lot, but they're in there to
show different influences. Because you're a bit of your humility is showing, and I'm going to add too, because I'm a fan of music, that the vocals are awesome.
Thank you.
There's a lot of country music out there country music, and it's great because you could throw any voice in there and it's good writing, but like you've got some good, great vocals.
Thank you,
so,
man. It's all a result of just the different influences that I've had throughout my life. And I think that's the most important thing, is I found my voice, right? I found, I used to want to emulate all the icons, right? All the greats. And, it was a long journey to get to this point where I figured out who Frank Ray is and you know, what I want to stand for and the kind of music I want to put out in the world. And I think we hit the mark. So I'm very, very proud of it.
I love that. Yeah. Finding your voice and figuring out what you want to stand for.
I like that, man.
Yeah. So, heck yeah.
Sounds like a t-shirt.
Right? I know. I'm thinking like, I think we got an episode title right there. For sure. Yeah. Well, so gosh, I always like to wrap with, asking, you know, for that person that's listening, watching, that's like, I'm one of those people you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would you like to say to them?
Speak up. I think this this whole conversation has been about the obstacles that stand in the way, whether it's the negative stigma or the funding or just, the logistics that get in the way. Nothing can stop you from speaking up. That's the one thing that's free of charge, mm-hmm. right? It doesn't take any effort to be able to say, hey, raise your hand and say, I'm not okay. And that's it. That's all it takes. If we can all do that collectively, you'll see that there's power in numbers, right? And we can affect some real change just by showing that it's necessary. And the only way to do that is to speak up about it. So use your voice, speak up, don't be afraid. You're not going to get any judgment from anybody here, certainly not anybody in this room. But as a society, if we can just do that collectively, then we'll be better off for it.
Could not agree more. Thank you again so much. Thanks, this Patrick. Has been a great treat. I really appreciate it and great conversation.
Yeah, back at you, man. Thank
you. Excited to watch you just explode in country music and do more good in your mission and what all you're trying to accomplish. So
things like this help out a ton. So thank you for allowing me to use a platform to be able to talk about the message and not just my music, but I couldn't do this without somebody. I think that's sort of the point of having this platform, is we have access to, different organizations that the media platforms, and whether it's radio or streaming or podcasts, these are the things that are important. And, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for inviting me here today.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cameron, we can thank Cameron for that.
Cameron.
One of the best.
Come on, Cam.
Yep. We're just thanking you for making today happen.
All right. Shout out, y'all. Big love.
Absolutely. Well, with that, I think we're going to, I don't know how we could make an episode any more better. I'm lost for all the good words today, y'all. I'm going to close out how I always do and remind each and every one of you that it's never too late to start loving yourself. And you're only ever one decision away from a completely different life.
This podcast is brought to you by Promises Behavioral Health. If you or a loved one are struggling with trauma, addiction, or mental health, we are ready to answer your questions and help you take that next step. Call our admission center at 888-648-4098 or visit us online at www.promises.com. Our team is ready and waiting to answer the call for help.